Good evening from Mackinac Island, Michigan, where we are having a conference on the time of awakening. I am part of this weekend gathering. The other speaker, William Henry, will not be recorded, so this talk on inner shift or the metaphysical shift that is occurring to the people of this planet is the talk that I will give today. And I will also offer a talk tomorrow comparing the time of outer shift of 2012 to the inner shift and how they coincide and how they differ. It is a blessing to be able to greet the people that are here in this gathering. It is a great blessing also to be able to greet those in the BBS radio audience. My name is Carla Ruckert, and I am a longtime channel. I started channeling the Confederation of Planets in the service of the Infinite Creator in 1974, and I am still channeling that source. My current channel almost inevitably is the Kuo group, which is a planetary a group made up of three planetary entities, an entity whose energy is love, named Baton, an entity whose energy is wisdom, named Latui, and an entity whose energy is unity, named Ra. I am also a trans channel, and I only channeled in trance for 3 years of my life. I never knew how I did it. I would never try it again. But it was a blessed, blessed time for me. And I think it developed a unique body of channeling, which is called the Law of One, or the Raw Material. It is in 5 volumes. All of these types of channeling through the years are available on our website. Probably 1,500 sessions of channeling are there. They're all free. The channeling site is www.llresearch.org. And you're very welcome to drop by and see if the material that we have might be of help to you in your spiritual walk. We certainly hope it is. LL Research is the company that my partner Don Elkins and my partner Jim McCarty formed. Don and I formed it first in 1970 as a partnership, and when Jim McCarty joined us in 1980, it became a nonprofit corporation. We actually went legal and went through all the IRS paperwork, so we are now a public charity, I'm happy to say. We have public meditations, two Saturdays a month at 8 o'clock, and the channelings are webcast. You may go to llresearch.org's website and be able to join our listening audience if you would wish to. We hope that you can do that. We thank those who have donated so that we are able to do that, because it's certainly not inexpensive to have a private chat room. But if you do join these channelings, you will be able to enjoy an untroubled chat room where people won't be just dropping in like they do in a public chat room and talking over the channel and asking, what's this? What's channeling? We tried that last year and we didn't think it worked too well. So we'll have a private chat room this year. From time to time, I will burst into song. I want to warn you all. Don't be startled. I do this as a person all the time. I'm forever singing. And I find that it's a really helpful technique for people when they're trying to grasp material that is not particularly logical. Because you listen to the words in a linear fashion with your logical brain. And yet, at the same time, there's a lot of mystery in the things that I will talk about this evening. And so the singing takes you to the intuitive, insightful part of your brain. And I think that's really helpful sometimes to sort of unite or bridge between those two complementary parts of the human mind and help them to sort of gang up on the concepts that I'll be talking about this evening. For the most part, the songs are hymns from the Episcopal hymn book, and I have changed a few words where the use of Jesus Christ or, you know, very Christian words is a little bit intrusive to the basic meaning of the way I take the word Christ, which is more in the general term of unconditional love, Christ consciousness, or cosmic consciousness. So please, if you hear a word that feels very religious to you, substitute in your mind the term unconditional love, and hopefully that will rebalance your thinking. I'd like to start with a story of Shelley Yates. Some of you may have taken part in the Fire the Grid event on July 17, 2007, not quite a month ago now. It was a fascinating experiment, and the story behind it is even more fascinating. Shelley Yates is a 40-something woman that lives in Nova Scotia. She was taking her young son home in her car, driving on a very wet and rainy night, and the car hydroplaned off the road, went down a bank, and turned over completely so that the car entered the boggy marsh waters upside down. Shelley did not have one of those hammers that her story makes us all feel perhaps we ought to go out and get and put in our front seat of the car in case something like this happened to us. She saw the car filling up with water. She tried to put her son up at the top of the car so that he could still breathe, and yet the car completely filled up with water. And her last thought was, well, maybe after the car fills with water, then the pressure will equalize and I'll be able to get out of the car. And that wasn't so. She had no joy there. Both doors were still jammed. Shelley couldn't hold her breath anymore. Her lungs were burning, and she took a breath of water. And then she took another breath of water, and her panic was growing. And all of a sudden, beings of light were all around her, and they told her, do exactly what we say, and you will be safe. Do exactly what we say, and your son will be safe. And they continued talking to her in this wise while she thought to herself, oh great, not only do I have voices talking to me in my last moments on earth, but they're sarcastic. However, she did exactly what they said, because really she didn't have anything else on her mind at the moment. And so she simply kept breathing the water and thinking thoughts of calm and peace and I am not afraid, just as they were instructing her to do. And 15 minutes later, help arrived. Her car was pulled out, and after 7 minutes of people working on her, she was able to cough up the water in her lungs and come back to life. She was fine. However, her first words were, my baby, get my son out of the car. And they dove down immediately and got the son, but they could not resuscitate him at the scene. The voices were telling her the whole time, be calm, do exactly what we say, your son is going to be fine. Of course, the doctors were telling her a different story. They were saying, your son's organs are suffused with blood, he is brain dead, we will continue to try to resuscitate him, but basically, he's a goner. However, the voices were still saying, no, he's going to be fine, just keep doing what we say. Have faith, remain calm, think loving thoughts, and know that all is well. So she did that. And what the voices told her to do was to get as many loving people near him as possible. So, of course, she immediately went on the phone and called everybody she knew, and dozens of people started arriving at the hospital. For 72 hours, once a half hour, someone came in to offer their gift of love to this little boy. The voices explained to her that what needed to be done was to share the strength of their auras with this child. And the reason that they shifted every half hour was because each person could only give of himself about 20 minutes before he began to run low on transferred energy, and therefore it would weaken the person if he kept on giving past that point. So every, you know, half hour a new person would come in and the other person would leave and there would be a 10-minute rest period. This went on for 72 hours. At the end of 72 hours, the little boy woke up, knew his mother. Within another 72 hours, he was running up and down the halls of the hospital perfectly well. He is perfectly well today. That's how she started hearing the voices. But the voices weren't finished with her. They said that she had more to do. She needed to tell humankind that unless humans get together as a unit and see themselves as a unified population, they will never be able to save the planet. They will never be able to move with the planet into the next realm or density of experience, because the planet itself is moving into another density. And if humankind wants to help the planet and help themselves at the same time, what they need to do is what she called fire the grid. Now, the voices told her that the grid is a name for the source energy that connects all things. Now, the Ra group would say we are all one. They called it being connected by source energy. It's basically the same concept. And they said that we would want to get together on July 17th as a globe full of people and all together fire the grid by thinking loving thoughts towards the planet, towards each other, thoughts of peace, thoughts of unity and harmony, so that we could energize this fourth density grid, or this grid of the next experience that is awaiting us past the gates of 2012. It was an amazing experience for me. I participated in it. I had a wonderful meditation for that hour. And later in the day, when I went to sleep that night, I also had an amazing night. I hadn't been asleep for very long when I woke up. And I didn't just hear one voice or a half dozen voices or even a dozen voices. I heard an innumerable number of voices. It was as if the biggest party in the world was going on in the next room, so that I couldn't understand any of the voices. There were so many that it just felt like there were millions and millions and millions of voices. And number one, I realized, this is wonderful. This is firing the grid. This is what's happening. These are the people that are participating all over the world. As the event rolled around the world for 24 hours, this was what was happening. On the other hand, it was very, very uncomfortable. And so I decided that in the interest of preserving a calm and gentle spirit, I would move out of this energy now that I had experienced it. And so I began working with my breath. I would breathe in light, and I would breathe out the voices, breathe in light and breathe out the voices. It took me about 2 hours to become single-minded again so that I was the only one in my head. I think this was my first experience of a baby waking up in her crib in fourth density and being aware of everybody's thoughts on the planet. And it was, like I said, both a wonderful experience and almost a terrifying experience. Yet, this is only because I'm a little baby in fourth density. I think once you achieve fourth density, where the veil has lifted and all thoughts are known, it's not at all frightening, because you know your own thoughts, you know everybody else's thoughts, and you know that none of us is really in control of our thoughts at this point. We're too young as developing souls to be in control of our thoughts. So having compassion on that youth, you don't worry about the fact that each person is struggling with various issues and stuff. I don't think we'll wake up in fourth density when next we incarnate and find ourselves completely different people. I think we will still be people with confusion and mystery all around us. What will have changed is that the veil will have lifted and we will have chosen this experience for ourselves. And we can begin choosing this experience right now. The experience of a lot of people in these last few years, especially in about the last year and a half, has been one of an increasing awareness of the imminence of this fourth density event of 2012. In reality, we have gotten from the Kuo group several times the fact that it virtually is here now, that the planet is vibrating fourth density now, and that much of the difficulty that we are having stem from the fact that we are vibrating third density for the most part, and certainly in a very confused way. So that there are people here that are very service to others oriented, that are attempting to vibrate fourth density positive. There are very powerful entities here that really believe in service to themselves, which is that you express your love of the infinite creator by loving yourself and by having other people help you to love yourself, by serving you. And so you use people. You look at people as cannon fodder units or pawns in your game. And these people, some of them will graduate to another fourth density negative planet elsewhere. This planet is going fourth density positive. Now, there's a large group of people that haven't chosen either polarity, either service to others or service to self at this time, and they're not vibrating either strongly polarized positive or strongly polarized negative. They're still in third density. They're still in the consensus reality world where nothing is very important. You live, you die, what does it mean, who knows, it doesn't matter. And you turn on the television and veg out. This is a perfectly reasonable thing. They tell us again and again in Confederation channelings not to worry about people who haven't made that choice yet. That it's okay. Doesn't matter. They're not ripe yet. Their time for choosing has not yet come. They will go to another third density planet where they can once again have a major cycle of third density during which they can try to learn the lessons of love to the point where they make that choice for love in service to others or for love in service to self. So if you want to have 75,000 plus more years of McDonald's and CSI reruns, then you're on the right planet, you're doing the right thing, and there is no punishment for not progressing as rapidly as your classmates. All is well. However, needless to say, these fourth density waves of energy that are interpenetrating third density are somewhat uncomfortable for those that are still vibrating third density. And a lot of people have felt this discomfort, some of them who are sensitive very, very harshly. And they're feeling that these are difficult times indeed. And it's easy to have fear when you don't really know what's happening and you're feeling pressed and you're feeling everything's rushing and you can't quite get your feet. Metaphysically speaking, you don't know what's happening, and meanwhile you're being buffeted by these really powerful waves of emotion and feeling and sheer energy. And this is what the Kuo had to say about these new energies. We ask you to respond to these waves of intense energy that you are feeling, not with fear, but with faith. Take this opportunity to stand on your own two feet and remember who you are and why you are here. As you breathe in and as you breathe out, you are little lighthouses able to take that breath and that energy of life and bless it with your firm intention to serve. The glow and the radiance of your beings shall be a beacon for many. You do not have to explain, discuss, or do anything to be light workers at this time. You have only to be yourselves and to know yourselves. So we would ask you to investigate and explore who you are and why you are here. It is somewhat difficult to explore this on planet Earth because this particular planet's logo, the sun, was a thought of love that decided that it wished to know itself in a different way than had ever been tried before. They tried a new combination. They tried giving the people of this third density population complete free will. And they also thickened the veil between our local world and the infinite creation of all that there is, so that we had this split between the conscious mind, our everyday consensus reality, or as some call it, the matrix, and the world of the infinite creator, which is infinite and eternal. So we do not have any way to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that we're on the right track. We have to choose our polarity. We have to choose our faith. We have to choose our intention totally by our own free will. This makes it a very clean and clear choice and helps people who are ready to make that choice to take that leap of faith. It doesn't help those who are not yet ripe or ready to do that. And so with this thick veil allowing us to say, well, there's no proof of that. I don't even know if there's a God, etc. There's every reason in the world for people not to step up to the plate and make that first cornerstone choice. However, one thing that has been very helpful in bridging the gap between the consensus reality world and our great belief in the current priests, which are, of course, scientists, and that which is a mystery to us and is only known by faith, is the work of Masaru Emoto. He worked with water crystal clusters and was taking photos of these clusters at the atomic level, or the level where there are just a cluster of molecules of water together. And he asked people to think various thoughts while they were looking at these containers of water, and he had his camera trained on them to take these pictures. The clusters that were sent thoughts of thankfulness, gratitude, love, and were played classical music by Mozart or Bach, created endlessly unique but always beautiful clusters of crystals, perfect and articulated and seemingly very complex, some of them. While the clusters that were sent thoughts of anger, jealousy, the remembrance of a difficult time in your past, or even thinking about a negative entity like Hitler, would cause the crystal clusters to become deformed and almost shapeless and very asymmetric. It really makes you think, because we as people are between 60% if you're a guy and 70% if you're a woman made of water. And, you know, our blood is water-driven, our lymph system is water-driven. If we don't get water through our minds or our hearts or our organs, they don't persist. They will die. And these bits of our water system are as easily magnetized as the water crystal clusters in those containers. We are containers of water ourselves. So imagine what our thoughts do to us when we're thinking toxic thoughts about ourselves or about other people. Our very bodies become magnetized in a very distorted way. And then to imagine what happens to us when we begin to have the consciousness of thoughts, to look at our thoughts as they arise, and if we feel that they need tuning, to give them some help so that they become thoughts of thankfulness. I had an experience of that getting ready for this speech, in that I had created the outline for the speech, and then my computer lost the document, or somehow it became blank. It was completely blank. My entire day's work was gone. And I realized, this is a really good psychic greeting. This is really effective. You know, I could really get upset. I could get scared. I could wonder how in the world I can make up the time. But you know what? I'm an old experienced fraud. I'm not going to do that. I am going to say thank you. So I thought how wonderful it was that the Beatitudes in the Bible were there to give me the way to go. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are those who are persecuted for love's sake. Well, I was being persecuted for love's sake. I thought, all right, that's me. And I began to get happy. I began to get joyful and knowing that all things were okay. And when I went back to recreate my outline, within a half an hour, I'd not only recreated it, but I think I'd improved it. It flowed better, it was more logical, and so forth. So it's really important to watch your thoughts and to tune them. Now, where this is going is that the Confederation information says that we are crystals. You could think of the crystal in a radio, where it receives information, it transmits information, and in some cases it transduces or changes information frequency before it sends it out. The way we receive the love and the light of the infinite creator through our energy system, we receive it with no effort whatsoever. It comes up from the ground itself. The ground has received it from the Logos, which is our sun. Logos is Greek for love, and it's the local expression of the one infinite creator. The sun's energy beams down to the womb at the center of the earth, metaphysically speaking, and then comes back up and enters from the earth through the soles of our feet up into our energy body, which begins where our legs join our bodies. It rolls through the energy body as it rolls up through the seven chakras and out the top of the head. And our crystals can receive it, and if nothing happens to block that energy, it flows into the open heart and can be blessed by our loving intention and then let go. It's nothing to do with us really, except that we realize and take responsibility for the fact that we are this place in space and time where the Creator has given us that spark of life and consciousness and free choice, to where we can choose the way we wish to live, the way we wish to think, and the way we wish to realize this energy that's flowing through us. The energy itself, the Confederation says, is completely infinite. There is no end to it. We can never run out of it. It is a completely renewable resource because the Creator's love is new every day, every hour, and every instant, and goes on forever. But we can be muddy crystals, or we can be clear crystals. Now, let me talk a little bit about the energy body. I think perhaps many of you have heard about the seven chakras. Several of our Western systems, and one of the Eastern systems as well, is based on a seven chakra system. There's the red ray at the joining of the legs, which energies have to do with sexuality and survival. there's the belly chakra, the orange ray chakra, which has to do with personal relationships, with our relationship with ourselves and our relationship with others. And if you think you can't have a relationship with yourself, just talk to Mike, a fellow that I talked to a little bit earlier who is attending this conference. He's working on forgiveness right now. Not forgiving others, forgiving himself. He's able to forgive others. It's a little harder to forgive himself because we know what we're thinking. We know our secret thoughts. We know that we're bozos. All of our thoughts are not excellent. Some of our thoughts seem to us to be error-prone and even erroneous completely. And yet, how can we love ourselves if we're in error? Well, we learn to do that. We learn to have compassion on ourselves because we are, after all, behind the veil in a place where we don't know all of the mysteries that would open to us if we could know our own thoughts completely or know others' thoughts completely. And so we begin to learn that precious, precious thing, compassion. Compassion for ourselves. And once you learn compassion for yourself, it is the easiest thing in the world to have compassion on other people. Because you've accepted the error-prone nature of humanity. And when you see it in others, it's like falling off a log. You say, well, you know, that person is kind of a quirky personality, but at the soul level, he's wonderful. He's doing his part. He's doing precisely what he came here to do, and I praise him and bless him and support him with everything that I'm worth. The quote says, you cannot become a fourth density entity within third density. However, you would be surprised how deep a change that you can make in the life of your body as well as your mind and your spirit by disciplining your thoughts. This instrument has talked many times about trying to live with fourth density values, seeing what you can do when you become aware of the thoughts that you are thinking, to examine them for what they may have to offer you. It is very helpful to see what you are thinking about and then to ask yourself if you could perhaps tune that instrument that you are to clearer and more productive thoughts. Moving upwards through the energy body, we get to the yellow ray chakra, which is the chakra at the solar plexus. This chakra has to do with those relationships that involve commitment. It's not simply a personal relationship. It's a legal relationship, a committed relationship. Your birth family is a yellow ray energy. Your married family or mated family is yellow ray. Your work environment is yellow ray. Even when you root for your favorite team, that's a yellow ray energy. Any group effort where people are trying to think as one or trying to cooperate as a group is a yellow ray energy. Now these first three chakras are the basic chakras which most often we work with in everyday life on the physical level. As we meet people and greet people and do our work and do our chores and deal with our feelings, it is very easy to be blocked in any of these three chakras. Very easy. Bad feelings about yourself sexually, feelings of depression, wanting to commit suicide, that'll shut your red ray chakra down completely right away. Judging yourself or judging others in relationships will shut your orange ray chakra down. Judging your husband, judging your work people, your boss, your co-workers, that will constrict and narrow and perhaps shut down the yellow ray chakra. So a lot of the initial work in opening up your energy body is again and again, daily, day after day, working to keep the three lower chakras completely open. What you're trying to do by keeping them open is not to solve your problems, because you can graduate to fourth density without ever having solved a single problem. You graduate because you have found love. You have found yourself able to love and to be loved in a pure manner. And that is what helps you to graduate. It isn't whether you've solved your problems and your life is moving forward neatly, or even if you think that you are making progress. You may think you are making no progress whatsoever. And yet, if you keep the energy body open and you keep your intention firm, your energy is going to come up into that open heart and just be flowed through the upper chakras and out into the world. And then you are like a lighthouse. You become a light worker, literally, because you're radiating, you're beaming your little light, you know. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. It's such a wonderful energy to feel that light pouring through from the infinite creator and you blessing it with your open heart and saying, world, I love you. Self, I love you. People around me, I love you. I love the whole thing. I love this dance. I love this world. And, you know, you just grow and grow and grow with those energies. But, of course, again and again and again, you will cycle back into closing the lower energies. It's inevitable. We can't stay on the mountaintop. First there is a mountain, and there is no mountain, then there is. A lot of our time is spent in the valley of the shadow. And you could say that that's the shadow of death. I could certainly argue that, because from the time we take our first breath, we are under the sentence of death. But that's a rather gloomy way to look at things. I'd rather look at this moment and say this is a moment of new life and new hope and new truth that's coming into the world at this very moment. In keeping the higher energies going, the difficulty is really not so much in keeping your chakras open. It is in realizing that even though higher chakra work is fun, it's wonderful, it's where you want to spend your life, you need always to be moving back down into the lower chakras and clearing them and then moving back up and doing your work. Cycling back down, clearing, moving up and doing your work. Not being impatient with yourself because you vary in your tuning. But simply going back and collecting yourself again and opening up and coming back to the higher chakras. Now the higher chakras are where all the fun is for those of us who seek to enhance the rapidity with which we pursue spiritual evolution. The green ray energy center is the center of healing and absolute unconditional love. The love of parents for their children and the love of patriots for their country and the love of all people who seek for the Creator and for serving the Creator, that feeling of devotion and joy and bliss that comes from a perfectly pure intention to serve to the very best of our ability. The energy of that will continue to the highest realms if we can but keep ourselves balanced. The danger, of course, for people who are progressing rapidly, especially as they first wake up and haven't become old and experienced as I have after 40 years in this metaphysical work, is that they're so in love with the feelings of the green ray chakra, which is unconditional love, the blue ray chakra, which is open communication and compassion, wisdom and compassion. And then, of course, the indigo ray, which is the seat of faith and work in consciousness, becoming a magical entity and doing the wonderful work of magicians and metaphysicians everywhere, which is tuning themselves into an ever more pure instrument of the Creator, is simply that they'll spend too much time there. And they won't want to attend to the first floor. I like to think of the chakra system as a two-story house. You want to go up to the upper room. Of course you do. It's where we all want to be. And yet, every day, maybe every hour, just depends on how your day is going, could be every 5 minutes, you're going to want to go and do your housekeeping. You're going to want to check, you know, the bedroom of Red Ray. You're going to want to check the living room of Orange Ray. You're going to want to check the kitchen and the dining room and the workroom of Yellow Ray. You're going to want to make sure that they're tidy and clear and free of the dust of self-judgment, judgment of others, those things that constrict and close the energy body. And you're going to make sure that you're not on a hobby horse determined to change the world with your wonderful information that overactivates the lower chakra and just as surely closes out the energy with which you can open your heart. So I think that the balancing technique that was offered in the raw material first and later in the Kuo channelings is a very helpful thing. And what that source suggested was that daily, hopefully towards the end of the day, so that we have a whole day's harvest of thoughts and feelings, you'd sit in a quiet place and just recollect the thoughts of the day. What were we thinking today? How were we feeling today? And when you find something that stopped you and triggered you and made you react in ways that you felt were toxic, or even when you found yourself overly joyful, you go back and say, what distorted me from just purely running love and light? What stopped me? What triggered me? And you find, as you do this work for a while, that you begin to see into the way your mind works. It's as if back in our past, maybe it's our childhood, most likely it's our childhood, but sometimes as an adult we can get hurt to this degree also. We have pains that are so exquisite that we must bury them. We just put them in a cocoon and we bury them like gems that are surrounded by ore. And we bury them in the ore of our personality because we simply cannot deal with them. And, you know, as children, you're not in control. You don't know the story. And nobody's telling you the story, usually. So there are a lot of buried treasures that will trigger you. And it's as if it's the emotional equivalent of somebody hitting a bruise. And you go, ow. Well, that's the trigger. And that tells you, well, it's time to dig for buried treasure. So you go down into your memory and you think, okay, how did I feel like this the last time I felt like this? And you usually can trace that feeling set all the way back to your source after a while. And when you get there, you dig it up, you crack the cocoon, here comes the gem, and you go, oh, that's what that was? Isn't that wonderful? I don't have that anymore. And never again will you be caught and triggered by that. Just out of habit, you might start to be triggered by it. But then you'll laugh and say, ha ha, I know you, and I'm not going there. And you move right along with your day. The skill takes a while to acquire, but it's one that really bears good results within a surprisingly short amount of time. And, of course, the operant word here is once you have found it, redeem it. Forgive yourself. Forgive the situation. Forgive anybody else involved in the situation. And clear that trigger. Clear that ore and preserve the gem of experience that you have to give to the one infinite creator, because it was intense and it was beautiful of its own kind. And it is a gift that you will give at the end of your life when your soul is harvested and you give all of your experiences to the creator and say, here, you wanted to know more about yourself? Well, here's what I've figured out so far. Then you're perfectly ready to move on. When you are able to do this, when you're able to let go and let yourself be balanced and just enjoy that wonderful feeling of self-redemption and self-affection so that you really, really do love yourself and more than that, you like yourself, you heal yourself. You become self-healed and self-forgiven And then instead of the King of Love being out there somewhere with a name like Jesus or Buddha or Kuan Yin or the Guru, you simply know that the King of Love has stayed within your heart the whole time, and you are now able to acknowledge the fact that that is a part of yourself. The King of Love, my shepherd, whose goodness faileth never, I know thee like if I am his, and he's mine forever. Where streams of living water flow, my ransomed soul he leadeth. And where the burden passions go, with whose celestial feet. And so through all the length of days, thy goodness faileth ever. Good shepherd, may I sing thy praise within my heart forever. We can do other things to tune ourselves. We can tune ourselves before we answer the phone. I sometimes just cross myself because I'm a mystical Christian, obviously. Most people can't do this because they don't buy the Christian thing. That's fine. You need to find your own way to bring yourself into a state of remembrance of who you are and why you're here. But in some way, remind yourself or bring yourself to recall that you're beginning a transaction with the Creator. Whoever's on the other end of the line, even if it's a salesman who's trying to sell you something you don't need, or one of your relatives or friends that is a user and is trying to manipulate you, that person is the infinite Creator. That person is you. We are all one. And so you tune yourself to meet the angel unawares, to meet the Christ on the road to Emmaus. You can do the same thing when you answer the door or before any kind of communication. You can just remember before you start an email or a snail mail. Remember before you start a conversation with your significant other or even your cat or your sink or your toilet as you wash it, because the universe is completely alive. And what you give to the universe is given back to you. What goes around comes around. You are always in a state of responsible interaction with a unified and very responsive world. The Ra people had a wonderful four-part suggestion as to how to tune your crystal. Their first suggestion is not very hard. The first suggestion is to use what they call the kingdom of the Father, which we would call the outside world, the creation, the animals and the plants and the stars in their courses and the sunshine on the roses and the rain on the meadow and the wind and the four elements of north, east, south, west, and all the elements, the chemical elements. They're all individuals of their own kind. They're all completely alive. And we have a relationship with them that we understand vaguely. You know, oh, it's so beautiful. Oh, I love the outside. And yet, we really haven't remembered what Shelley H. was talking about, that we're part of an interactive, unified grid. The whole planet is one grid. Well, what we're trying to do is strengthen the fourth density grid. We're not trying to find peace in the Middle East specifically. We're not trying to go after details here. We're trying to fire the entire grid. And what is keeping us back more than anything is that thousands of years ago, we, in connection with our guardians of this planet, decided that this third density experience was going to have this complete cessation of union with the grid. We weren't going to be aware that our species, human beings, had one species grid so that we were all interactive. Salmon know, geese know, every species in the creation on this planet knows that they are part of one grid, and they communicate within that grid as perhaps you'd say a hive mentality. So all the salmon jump upstream at the same time, and the geese fly past you in flawless coordination. We don't do that. We don't have that grid connection with each other because we chose to put a veil between ourselves and that knowledge so that we could only recover that knowledge by choosing to recover that knowledge, by having faith that it existed, and by leaning into that grid with all of our heart and all of our intentions. So we can learn from the infinite creation in so many ways. I love most of all, I suppose, a very simple example of how the universe works together. We are breathing out carbon dioxide. We're breathing in oxygen. The trees are breathing out oxygen. They're breathing in carbon dioxide. People, trees, work. It's one complete union where we're helping them live, they're helping us live. We don't think about it, and neither do they. It's part of the dance. What we need to do is more and more become aware of the dance. There's a wonderful channeling that George Hunt Williamson did, and we offer it on one of our recordings. It was a member of the elder race that he was channeling called Brother Philip. And Brother Philip talked about the dance of all creation and how humankind was just sitting on the edge of the floor going, well, I can't dance. But of course, once you get that consciousness out of your head and you become aware that you're part of the dance, then you're already dancing. It's not a dance of arms and legs and coordination that way. It's a dance of spirit. And there is only one spirit. So as we enter in, as we realize that truth, then we begin to hear the voices of spirit in nature. And I think probably the American Indians have a wonderful lesson to teach us, as well as many, many other indigenous species, societies on this planet, because they have this concept of totems that, you know, you have an animal or a bird or some sort of energy, trees and various things, that is your totem, that is your power, or your wisdom, or your indication of yourself. And you may have many different totems throughout your life, but that totem for you is very special. In my own case, I became aware that one of my totems, at least, was a hawk when we began seeing hawks as we began to have the Ra sessions. Now, the Ra is a group that is identified with the ancient Egyptians. And Ra in that mythical system, which has nothing to do with the Ra group, but is part of the cultural myth of Egypt, was identified as a hawk-headed god, Horus. And so when we started getting Ra, we started getting hawks. And to this day, my husband and I will be driving down the road, and we might say something talking about our work with LNL Research, and a hawk will just come. The most recent, it happened just last week, and we were talking about the future of LNL Research and realizing, well, you know, if we want to form a spiritual center and have a biodynamic farm and do all these wonderful things to create a fourth density environment on third density planet Earth, we don't have the money to do that. And my husband said, but we have to have faith. We can't just count our money. We have to have faith that at the proper time, everything will fall into place. And at that point, a hawk flew up right next to where we feed the birds, little birds, not hawks. And sat right in the closest branch to that window and just sat there. And as we continued, we went into meditation, and we meditated for about 20 minutes. And he stayed throughout the meditation. When we came out of meditation, the hawk left. So once you become aware of the power of working with nature and being one with nature, nature will begin to speak to you. I think that's probably the easiest, because nature is so beautiful, it's very easy to see that the kingdom of the Creator is in nature. All things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the Lord God made them all. Each little flower that opens, each little bird that sings, He made their glowing colors, He made their tiny wings. All things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the Lord God made them all. Gary, I want to ask before I go on, how much time do I have left to talk? It's about 5 minutes of 10. Do I have until 10:30? Okie dokie. Then I will move it along a little bit faster than I have been. I'm such a storyteller, I sometimes get caught up in all of the wonderful stories that you can tell about these principles. But I do that, and I'm not going to get through this material, so we're going to move right along here. The second way of working to become a more open crystal, a more beautiful crystal, is to work with other people. That's significantly harder than working with the trees and the animals and the winds and stuff, because other people can talk back to you. Other people can be difficult. Other people can be challenging, of course. And yet, the Ra group says, the universe is one being. When a person views another person, see the Creator. When we see somebody else, we're not just seeing gender, age, weight, attractiveness, status in life, the clothes they're wearing, the speech that they're, how they talk, or any other detail whatsoever. I'm coming apart here, aren't I? Excuse me, radio audience, I have to put my evening gown back together. At the Grand Hotel, they make you dress for dinner, which I don't mind at all. I love to dress, but under the joy of talking to you, I am forgetting completely that my dress has a tendency to fall off one shoulder, and it's sure everybody in the room is sitting here looking at part of my underwear. This is not good. Okay, I think I've gotten myself fixed. So when we look at people, we look past the outside. We look at the soul. We don't get caught with our personality judging their personality. We look right into the soul, and we say, you are I am you, and we are the Creator. We are all one. Love one another as I love you. Care for each other as I care for you. And bear each other's burdens, and share each other's joys. Love one another, and bring each other home. The third way is that you can work on your crystal, the crystal that is yourself, to brighten it up and to help it flow ever more freely, is much more difficult than number one and number two, and that is to use yourself, work with yourself. Now, the easiest way to work with yourself, the most patent way or obvious way to work with yourself, is very literally to look in the mirror. And I don't mean to look at your face. I mean to get close to the mirror, close enough that you can see the black part of the eye, the part that's receiving the light. It's also sending out the soul. So you want to look into the mirror to see your soul. Just look in the mirror for 30 seconds a day. And at the end of a week, see how you feel about yourself. See how your feelings about yourself have changed. That's the suggestion that Rod Root gives. Gaze within the mirror, see the Creator. You can think of this gazing in the mirror another way, though, because when we look at anything, we're looking in a binocular vision. We have one eye on one side of our nose, one eye on the other. I mean, given that we're doing well in this life, we have that arrangement. And you could say that one eye is looking at the outer world and one eye is looking at the inner world. But we have a third eye, the indigo ray, right in the middle of our forehead. And perhaps we can envision ourselves blending and unifying our inner world and our outer world as they meet in that place where faith and will and the magical way dwell, so that we unify our view of the world. We unify our view of ourselves, and we begin to see ourselves as we truly are, as sons and daughters of love and co-heirs of that creatorship that makes us part of the creative principle, citizens of eternity and infinite in our nature. I think that the most common technique of indigo ray is meditation. One of the attendees was asking me earlier what I thought of meditation, and I simply said, well, the key of meditation is the silence. I don't really care what kind of technique that a seeker uses in order to turn the key to the door of the open heart. The key itself is silence. When you are able to stop the chatter of your inner self, then you have the capacity for the first time to hear the voice that lies beyond words. In the Bible, it's called the still small voice. But it is that silence that has the information that words cannot bear. As a channel, I find myself trying to explain to people what the process is like. And the process is that I receive concepts. And when I get the concept, it's round like a ball. It might be a sentence worth of roundness. It might be a paragraph, or I might have to tell a whole story in order to exhaust the concept. And so the job of a channel is, in a way, as a translator. You're taking concepts and you're translating it into words so that people can understand it with their linear mind. But see, on the inner level, if you can achieve silence, then you do not any longer have to worry about the translation. You've got the translation licked. And you don't have to translate anything because your subconscious mind has never left the infinite creator. It knows everything that you don't know. It's on the other side of the veil. And of course, you have it available to you in shadowed forms and dreams and visions. But in everyday life, you really don't have access to it. But in meditation, when you achieve silence, you are able to let this informational flow start. And that's really the goal, whether you're looking at a candle or following your breath or doing Zazen meditation or taking a walk in the woods and watching and listening to the birds. Any way that you achieve inner silence so that you're not gabbing at yourself, judging others, and all the things that we do, having conversations with ourselves and so forth. That is the desired point of meditation. There's an old hymn. It's not in the new hymnal of the Episcopal Church. It is in the old one. And the first verse of it goes like this. O Jesus, thou art standing outside the fast closed door, in lowly patience waiting to cross the threshold door. Shame on us Christian brothers whose name and sign we bear, and shame, thrice shame upon us who keep them standing there. It's about Jesus waiting to be asked into our hearts. But you know, I think the model of that is backwards, because I think Jesus is already in our hearts. Or I should say, unconditional love is already in our hearts. Christ consciousness is already there. It is the very nature of our open hearts. We're the ones that are outside, forgetting to knock on the door, turn the key of silence, and enter. So it really behooves us to turn that key and to enter. In the outer world, when we say, I this, I that, too much, people say, well, he's an egotist. And ego means I in Latin, and it's the small I, it's the personality shell. The personality shell is a construct. It's sort of like a suitcase of stuff we pack to take into incarnation. Let's see, I need this gift and this gift and this limitation and this inability to do that whatsoever, can't do that. Okay, we pack all these things. We pack our moms and our dads and all the relationships that we have. We pack extras, too. We have redundant relationships. So if one doesn't work out, another one will pop up. That one doesn't work out. We have endless supplies of these things because we've been incarnating on Earth for 75,000 years. We've got tons of relationships to draw on. So we make all these contingent plans. We can't run out. Everything is all set up for us. And we pack our bags and we get an incarnation. Of course, we forget completely that this bag we pack is baggage. It's detail. It's not us. We are bigger than that. We are spiritual entities who have taken physical form. We are, as my friend Barbara Brodsky says, angels in earth suits. We forget that. And we really need to collect ourselves and to remember that we can not only follow the Creator, but we can be the Creator. We can realize the Creator part of ourselves by being willing to do that. Here, O my Lord, I see thee face to face. Here would I touch and handle things unseen. Here grasp with firmer hand eternal grace. And all my weariness upon thee lean. I have no help but thine, nor do I need another arm save thine to lean upon. It is enough, my Lord, enough in thee. My strength is in thy might, thy mind alone. It's thy might to a person whose only concept of the Creator is to go to church and learn about it secondhand. It becomes our might when we claim creatorship for ourselves and interiorize this process that religion is trying to help us to grasp. Then we can become the consciousness that is the large I, the I am that I am. It's a wonderful thing occasionally to rise to the mountaintop and experience that wonderful feeling, that knowing, that gnosis, that I am, that I am. Just that much. And the world is perfect. All is as it should be. And you look upon a harmonious and undivided world. The fourth and final way that we attempt to know the Creator is to know the moment. The Ra group says this: the moment contains love. That is the lesson and goal of this illusion or density. The exercise is consciously to see that love in awareness and understanding. The first attempt is the cornerstone. Upon this choice rests the remainder of the life experience of an entity. The second seeking of love within the moment begins the addition. The third seeking empowers the second. The fourth, powering or doubling the third. As with the previous type of empowerment, there will be some loss of power due to flaws within the seeking in the distortion of insincerity. However, the conscious statement of self to self, of the desire to seek love, is so central an act of will that, as before, the loss of power due to this friction is inconsequential. Seeking the love in the moment. I love that. Where is the love in the moment? I love that question. And I ask myself that a lot. And I have found that a lot of times when you're moved to ask that question, where is the love in this moment, you're not going to find it unless you decide to be the love in that moment. So step up to the plate at those times. And love what you're seeing, not judging it, not trying to fix it. We didn't come here for that. We certainly came here to share our gifts with the world, and some of our outer gifts may involve working with the environment, working with politics, working with economics, working to change society's woes, changing the water in our ditch from bad water to good water, all of the things that the environmentalists are talking about, becoming responsible for the world around us. According to our outer gifts, this is a wonderful thing to do, but it's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is looking at the moment and seeing that we, by the way we relate to that moment, can either love it or judge it, can either love it or fear it. There's a wonderful prayer by St. Francis that bears on this point. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, union. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Dear Master, teach me to seek not so much to love, as to be loved, as to love. Not so much to be consoled, as to console. To be pardoned, as to pardon. For it is in giving that we receive. It is in consoling that we are consoled, and it is in dying that we rise to eternal life. Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. My husband and I decided in August of 2001 to begin offering to the earth and to the cause of peace that prayer, make me an instrument of thy peace, daily at 9 o'clock at night. And you are welcome to join us. People do from all over the world. And it's one of a number of ways to join in global efforts to change the vibration of planet Earth and to help it achieve an easier fourth density birth. There's a theory or a description of the way things are that the Confederation Channeling offers that I think is especially helpful. And I touched on it earlier. It is the concept of polarity. Now, polarity, you think about polarization in your sunglasses, for instance. It splits the light into light and dark and enables you to see in bright sunlight better. Polarity also has to do, say, with magnetism, where you have a positive and a negative end to a magnet, and that like ends repel and opposite ends attract. But it's probably easiest to think of how polarity works in our environment if you think about the way a car works, because you've got cylinders resting at dead center, and you need the power to kick them off dead center and to get the engine going. And so you have a spark plug that sparks and ignites, and you kick that cylinder, and then the next, the engine starts going, and you ride off into the sunset. You do your chores and to do your work. You're empowered to do your work. Well, what empowers polarity for us is that first choice that we make to be of service to others, or to be of service to ourselves. But I don't think I'm talking to people that want to polarize in service to themselves. I think I'm talking to people who want to polarize in service to others. So our first cornerstone choice is that moment when we know we have awakened We're never going to go back to sleep in this life. We can't simply tell ourselves it doesn't matter. We know it matters. We know that it's time to be responsible citizens of eternity and to help bring forth fourth density as we came here to do, as we intended to do before we were ever ready to go into incarnation, before we ever took the plunge into this valley of the shadow where we can't remember why we came until we finally wake up. After we've made that first choice, then we've got something going. We've started to kick the cylinder off of dead center. We've gotten out of the gravity well a little bit. And every time we repeat that choice, we increase our power, our polarity. And eventually, if we get to the point where more than half the time we're of service to others in our thoughts, we've just achieved graduation. It amounts to seeing somebody that's hungry, tearing your peanut butter sandwich in half and giving him the big half. We care about others more than ourselves more than half the time. That's graduation. That if you can do that, just that much, not being 90% service to others or saints, just 50% makes us a saint. 51% makes us a saint on earth. With all our faults, with all the dirt on our faces and the stubbed toes, we are saints on earth. If we can but be of service to others 51% of the time. In order to graduate service to self, you have to be of service to self 95% of the time, and of service to others no more than 5% of the time. So it's very difficult, you would think, to graduate in the negative sense. Much easier to graduate in the positive sense. And yet that is not true, because it's just as hard to help yourself clear up to the point where you're thinking about others 51% of the time as it is to achieve a rating of 95% service to self. In between the 5% and the 51% lies the gravity well of third density. And those people will simply have to keep repeating third density until they learn the lessons of love. As John Lennon said, no heaven beneath us, no hell beneath us, and no heaven above. The hell and the heaven are in our minds, and our minds are one with the Creator. Both are within us, and we can always choose which place to dwell. I sing a song of the saints of God, patient and brave and true, who toiled and fought and loved and died for the Lord they loved and knew. And one was a doctor and one was a queen, and one was a shepherdess on the green. They were all of the saints of God, and I mean God help me to be one too. They loved their Lord so dear, and his love made them strong. And they followed the right for Jesus' sake the whole of their good life long. And one was a soldier, and one was a priest, and one was slain by a fierce wild beast. And there's not any reason, no, not the least, why I shouldn't be one too. And as always, if you hear Lord or Jesus, substitute unconditional love. That is what I have to say today, and I've left just a little time for questions and answers before we go off the air. Does anybody have a question?
When you said that pupil thing, look in the mirror, was it 30 seconds, you said, or 30 minutes?
The question was when I said to look in the mirror first and see the Creator, did I say look in the mirror for 30 seconds or 30 minutes? And actually, that's a very powerful practice, and it would not be good to do it for more than 30 seconds to begin with. Now, you can expand that the moment that you use. You can go up to a minute and then gradually up to 2 minutes and 3 minutes and so forth, because it is a powerful practice, and it's a good way to recover your former incarnations as you look in the mirror and you're looking into your soul, then you can actually sometimes see your face begin to change shape. Now, this doesn't usually happen right away. It takes a little practice to get past the self-consciousness of, well, I'm looking in the mirror and this is pretty silly. And, you know, you're sitting in the bathroom and it doesn't feel very magical. But you have to be able to let go and just really get into that focus. And then you can begin to realize yourself in a whole different way. And it's really a very helpful practice.
I have people who are talking to join the moment. Because when I'm holding the addiction up, it's a warmth, it's an insight. But it's not the concrete joy, more of an abstract joy, in a way. So if you find joy to be with Jesus, I mean, I'm not Christian. And, to me, joy is some concrete thing that happens. And when you look around and see lots of things that go from bad to worse, I take it for more kind of content or something else. But I wouldn't call it joy. Can you comment on
that's a very interesting question, because of course we're facing difficult times, and I've had conversation with this particular attendee, and she has a long history of political activism, and is one who feels that all people should be equally gifted with the fruit of their labors and the share in complete equality, the wealth and the resources of the world. It was a wonderful, inspired notion of Jesus the Christ. It was also a wonderful and inspired notion of the Marxist desire to open up the wealth of the world to what he called the working man, or what people in ages past might have called peons or serfs or slaves, or just the poor that Jesus said we have always with us. And how in the world do you feel joy when you know that there's injustice and poverty and hunger and disease and war and all of these things in the world? And she also asked me, well, I seem to find joy in Jesus, but she's not a Christian. How can she find some concrete source of joy? And in actuality, although I do find joy, certainly, in my contemplation of the divine amount of focus that this man was able to give to love, so that even on the cross, when he was being terribly used, he said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." Well, people who are involved in wars and killings and injustice and taking and using and all of these things know not what they do. If they knew what they were doing, they would be shocked. Because what they think they are doing, what all people of power tend to think they are doing, is managing things for the good of everybody. People out there don't realize how difficult it is. We have diminishing resources, and we must make sure that our people have these resources, and this is for their own good. This is to keep people safe, and so forth and so on. And so they continue making their own laws and then breaking their own laws and going about despoiling and ravaging the poor of the world and even killing them as if they were nothing. How can you find joy, especially a concrete joy, and not simply a joy of the mind or a joy of the unknown in life? And I think that what you have to do is get below the radar of politics, society, religion, and all the details of our everyday life. You have to focus down until you get into your daily life. You have to look at the person who is washing the dishes. I was washing the dishes one time, and I had this amazing experience where something about the way the light was glinting off the dish and the smell of the soap and just my own state of mind at the time led me into a kind of realization or satori where the dish was shining and the dish was singing to me, and it was saying, "You really did me. You really washed me so clean. I feel so good." And it was going on and on about how good it felt because I was washing it with love. And the joy of that action communicated itself to me in a very concrete way. I've had that experience cleaning the bathroom. I've had that experience gardening, as I'm weeding, and the plantings are saying, "Oh, I just couldn't breathe. All those weeds were in there. Now it feels so good." It's the tiniest things in life. It's, what's that book? Chalk wood, carry water. It's the basics of life where you really have the most access to joy and bliss, because in doing these very simple things, as you do them with all your consciousness open, you're totally awake. You're aware and you're conscious. And in that consciousness, there is space for information, because that feeling of consciousness has so much light to it. It's really fourth density light. And so you lift yourself up almost by your bootstraps by entering into life, by becoming totally incarnate, by accepting the dirt of life, by accepting the silliness of life, the ridiculousness of life when you see it, and knowing that beneath all of the emptiness and the vanity and the vainglory lies the love and the light of the infinite creator. It is like focusing in and in on the non-sublime until you get past your judgment of the simple things and begin to be aware of the dance. And I think that dance is that wonderful place that we can go and become one with the soldiers and the saints and the silly people and the stupid people. I think so much of Walt Whitman as a poet, and one of the things he said as a poet, he was trying to tell people how to get to that place of joy. And I can't quote the whole thing, but he was basically saying, keep your promises, be true to your word, be kind to the crazy and the stupid, in all things, follow your heart, and you shall be a living poem. Getting to yourself, becoming able to let your light shine, is a matter of getting out of your own way and refraining for that moment where you wish to come into touch with your true and deep self from looking at the details of the world around you. I myself am often appalled by things that are occurring in the world. Nobody wants to see people killed or maimed, especially innocents and especially innocent children. And yet we know this is happening again and again and again. So we want to allow ourselves to be larger than what is coming at us from the outside. Because what is coming at us from the outside will continue until we stick our spoon in the wall and move on. Yet the process of graduation has to do with what happens in our inner self. And if we can realize that we have the ability and even the responsibility to let up from our social selves, our married selves, our roles in life as workers or mothers and fathers or sons and daughters or whatever groups we're a part of. And this includes armies and war. And we can, in whatever circumstances we find ourselves, realize that whatever happens to us is not to be judged, but to be gazed at with love and affection. If appalling horror is in there, we gently allow it to fall away so that we can stay conscious and we can decide how we want to shape our response. And it's not just our outer response we're trying to shape. one of the very first sessions that we had with Rob, Rob began by asking, what are your thoughts this day? That is the arena in which the our knighthood shall be won, in which we may go forth and offer our love to the world in our beaujolais of love and light. I believe that it is about time for us to wind things up. And so I want to thank Bob, the producer of this wonderful weekend, and all of the people that are here, and all the people in BBS Radio. I want to thank Don Nusib for arranging for this to occur, and for all of those involved with broadcasting this. Many thanks to all of you, and from us, good night.